Welcome to Taking the Rams by the Horns, a podcast that takes current affairs out of current affairs. This is an award-winning podcast in partnership with Sowetan Live. I'm your host, Rams Mabote. South Africa is alive with possibilities. I mean, who would have imagined a former president in jail, a sitting president sleeping on cash, literally, a cabinet minister visiting a common prisoner in jail, or even the post office operating, even when they have nothing to do?
Can you confirm that delivery performances dropped?
Welcome to the new Sowetan Live podcast called Taking the Rams by the Horns with me, Rams Mabote. Each week, I will be taking a lighter look at very serious topics that half the time drive you up the wall. This podcast will use humor to take no prisoners, have no holy cows, and cook a whole lot of sacrificial lambs. We all have read a story that was clearly fictional, or even a work of fantasy. Well, not all of us. As the case may be in South Africa, where books are feared more than a stray lightning in Limpopo or a gun-toting, trigger-happy Inkabi in the heart of KwaZulu-Natal or Dube Men's Hostel. But none of us can ever have predicted the script of the 2024 hit and the bestseller called The Government of National Unity, the GNU. Like the beast it is named after, the new, or GNU, remains mysterious with its confusing features, and yet it continues to hop forward, its challenges notwithstanding.
The establishment of the Government of National Unity is singularly a very cruel joke by the Ramaphosa faction of the ANC and the Democratic Alliance.
In a matter of a week or so, the cruel joke will be 6 months old. The Government of National Unity has survived internal attacks from its key proponents, the frustrations brought upon by the Democratic Alliance and its god, Helen Zille, the constant criticism from those outside the room, particularly the Economic Freedom Fighters, and Umkhonto weSizwe Party. 6 months down the line, the GNU is like the proverbial bird on the wire. Everyone shooting at it seems to be missing. The electricity wire is also misfiring. And the bird itself, although unsure of its next move, is not falling off the wire. But what has the GNU achieved in its 6 months? Although not very obvious, firstly, we finally have a muted Helen Zille. Secondly, DA cabinet ministers are enjoying the limelight out of the shadows. These are the same guys who spent the last 30 years as shadow ministers to the real ministers. It started with a doubt, President Cyril Ramaphosa appointing his cabinet a mixed masala of strange bedfellows. From the opposition benches, John Steenhuisen rose from a man who opposed everything to suddenly visiting China and finding the virtues of trading with communism. Then there was a plethora of ministers from small parties like the IFP, the Freedom Front Plus, and the Patriotic Alliance, whose names most of us cannot remember. There was also a PAC president who got the land, at least for himself. And today, almost 6 months later, the GNU has achieved another major. It has seen its first reshuffle. Earlier this week, President Ramaphosa removed from the justice portfolio embattled Thembi Nkadimeng and moved her to human settlement. You can always bank on our president to come up with the least likely solution to deal with his errant comrades. Now Nkadimeng finds a humane settlement from what some may describe as an act of injustice that she is accused of. But in truth, what have been the good, the bad, and the ugly of this GNU? Other than Gaitin McKenzie losing half a kilogram of weight and gaining more of his vocal cord, the GNU decimating an unintended enemy in the form of the EFF, the DA quietly staying in the room while in public still trying to play to the gallery, I cannot tell you whether the GNU center is still holding. So, I decided to call a friend. Political analyst Luko Namguni joins me this week to help me understand whether this government of national unity is what it was made to be. Mthembu Molo.
No, good morning. Molo.
Are you well?
No, I'm good. Can't complain. That time of the year, though, where we are looking to be Amagoduga.
Yes,
well, do the great trek home.
Yeah, well, you know, I noticed in the traffic upper that it has slightly begun. Well, the first Amagoduga Ngabantwana Besikolo, so they are already at home.
Yes.
They've cleared their.
Absolutely.
So now you guys will follow soon.
They're clearing the 8 a.m. traffic.
Exactly. Now, when you guys leave in the next 2 weeks, I can drive in the entire Johannesburg go reverse.
Absolutely. And nobody will bother you.
Exactly. Mfondini, is the center holding with the GNU?
Well, we have to ask if there is a center at all, and try locate where is the center? Like locating John, where is John? Have you seen John?
Have you seen John?
Because really, the latest developments tell you that there's a bit of a loose center, and it's not holding as probably as much as one would think. Of course, they've made an attempt to develop the clearinghouse for the GNU, which is a body of political parties chaired by the deputy president of the ANC, mm-hmm. Paul Mashatile, as a way of trying to sort out some political, you know, differences prior to things getting to cabinet and to structures of government. But as you would have seen now, with everybody having to clarify themselves, the Minister of Basic Education with Solidarity, the president says no, but the powers are that of the president, yeah, at the end of the day, and so on. And that's because, to a degree, all of them are just engaged in unconstitutional conduct, in my view, where there are clear processes. If something in a piece of legislation doesn't make sense for the president, he's duty bound not to sign that piece of legislation and send it back to Parliament for clarification on those issues he would have raised. And therefore, Parliament would be the one that then, you know, does any public consultation if there is a need to do that.
Mm.
You don't leave it to some unseen and unknown parties and say, no, these clauses I will suspend for 3 months. You go find yourselves and come back to me. That doesn't indicate a sense of a center. It's like the proverbial kicking for touch.
Well, for me, it looks like, you know, it's easy when me and my, if I were married with my wife, we have problems, then would there's a mechanism to deal with these things. But once Kuban is tame, woman, it gets difficult, right? It gets complicated. And it feels like it's a Tembu kind of arrangement, this one.
It's Tembu generally does create confusion. Okay. I used to say during former President Jacob Zuma's time that his East Tembu had translated to a polygamous foreign policy, because it was quite difficult to gauge where South Africa is going and what its true intentions are. I mean, as we were joining BRICS, he actually enjoyed a very close relationship with the United States, with President Barack Obama. And of course, South Africa even voted on that no-fly zone resolution on Libya.
Yeah.
And then everybody pretends like they are not too sure what they were signing for, whereas certain allies like Russia, China, were actually abstaining from that, you know, even Germany abstained from that vote. But because we were in this polygamous foreign policy state where our friends were quite clear at some point, and in some instances they were not. And I think here you are seeing a classic case of that. And maybe we might even accuse the ANC of East Tembu too prematurely. Maybe the ANC has been a bachelor all its life since 1994.
Now it has got into a marriage, right?
After 30 years of living on its own, it has to be in this marriage. And it's got a very rowdy spouse.
No, spouses. Right, there are others.
Well, I mean, the most, if we're quite honest, though, the most demanding spouse is the DA.
Yes.
And of course, yes, it may well be
the first wife, right?
No, that's the first wife,
Yes.
and it's the first wife, and it's refusing to give consent for other wives to be, authoritatively married. So it wants that prime position to itself and on its own. And I think that's really what you are dealing with here. The ANC itself is not too sure how to handle this because it doesn't want to, present itself as cowering to the demands of the DA too easily. The DA is quite clear; it has a constituency to serve. And it has to stand up for that constituency. And then other parties on this Bella issue are just coming out saying, no, just implement this Bella thing, get over and done with it. But you don't see the IFP, having a disruptive, voice and rowdy voice. They probably prefer to work quietly. The FF Plus, as much as it wants, a stake in the Bella Act issue, it's not as forceful and as
And
loud
you
as
would think they would be
the
more loud, right? I mean, they, this
No,
defense of the
absolutely.
Afrikaans
And also
language and stuff like that.
those constituencies like Solidarity, Afroforum are more in their, ecosystem than they are in the DA ecosystem.
Exactly.
But then this tells you, though, the politics that have been at play. I mean, if you look at the FF Plus electoral outcomes on May 29 this year, they lost almost half of its support and lost half of the seats that they had in the National Assembly,
Yeah.
which means that the DA pretty much understands that it is the cushion for that kind of constituency, and it must be seen as actively championing its interests as well.
So basically, and I'm digressing a bit, but taking from what you're saying, so it DA are to the FF Plus what MK has become to the ANC, maybe even to the EFF.
Well, to a degree, I mean, and it was quite clear when, I mean, Helen Zille started attending marches on farm matters with Afroforum that she was gunning for that constituency.
Yeah.
They had felt that part of their loss in 2019 was due to them ceding space to FF Plus, and I still think it was not the best of analysis because the DA still lost votes, by the way,
Yes.
in material terms. This is that they gained percentage wise in terms of where they are. But so it tells you that they are indeed after going after that constituency. They want to service that constituency. It's probably a much more low hanging fruit constituency for the DA than growing your strength and timber in the black community, which is probably particularly where our politics are now in terms of how polarized they are becoming. It will be much harder for a perceived white party to make inroads into black communities as much as the DA once wanted to.
Who has been the biggest winner or winners of this GNU?
I think the biggest winners of the GNU is business because they can get on with their lives without worrying about shifting portfolios, doing this and that. Their wealth had a good rally on the JSE post the formation of the GNU. We saw the stocks being green. We saw the rand dollar, currency exchange being favorable at some point, and therefore it allowed people some space to accumulate wealth, shift funds, and do all of those kind of things. I think that's one story. Also, because the DA then comes as the voice that's going to probably help consolidate the gains of business over the last 5 years, particularly on areas such as Operation Vulindlela, private-public partnerships, the involvement of the private sector in the state, in terms of accumulating even certain state assets, to then run them. You've been seeing the divisions that are being made, the unbundling of Eskom, unbundling of certain aspects of Transnet, and so on. And I expect this to carry over to other departments and areas of work. There's a big fight about distribution licenses, transmission licenses that NERSA has given to some private sector players to do cross-border transmission of electricity, and Eskom or the Department of Electricity and Energy might be going to court on those issues. So it's quite clear then that at that level, I think business has a much more stable environment in terms of their version of stability. They have greater certainty in terms of who the players are. And they've got advocates in government who will help champion their interests. And I think the second winner is probably the ANC. The ANC is a winner in the sense that they've managed really to consolidate a big part of government under their leadership. And that gives them some favorable spotlight into society. It's for them to waste the opportunity to re-endear themselves with the voters, and therefore it will be for them to lose. I mean, these are guys at 40%. The opposition could have clubbed together to chase them out of office entirely and sent them to all be backbenchers in the hallways of parliament. But that has not happened, and therefore, to a large degree, they then do become the winners because they still, enjoy ownership over a vast array of state machinery, which allows them to dispense patronage in the ways that they can and make it as favorable as possible. But they are a party that's becoming seriously and hotly challenged. I'm just waiting to see the final results of the by-election in Tabazimbi, but it does seem as if you get some new parties that are aligned to certain constituencies, like the Labour Party of AMCU, aligned to mining constituencies, seems to have taken a ward from the ANC in that by-election in Tabazimbi. So even in the heartland of the ANC, like Limpopo, very solid ground, some parties are able to start penetrating and weakening the ANC. So it's up to them to make something of it. And I think lastly, the DA is also a winner. A winner in the sense that at some point, the DA really wanted to perfect how to be the best opposition official opposition party in the world. And now they've been drawn into government at a national level. So it gives them a greater, popularity with the wider public. It allows them to showcase what they can do at a national level. I think it's been a bit difficult in terms of them having to know and learn how government works. We've seen some pronouncements that couldn't become possible without, cabinet resolutions and so on. And I think the biggest test is going to be the withdrawal of the SABC
bill. But how
bill.
So? These guys have been running a government in the Western Cape forever. I would have thought they know how to run a government.
I mean, but let's remember that the individuals who have been part of the Western Cape government, actually none of them are part of
yes,
the national
indeed.
Government.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
The guys who are in the national government have all been, by far and large, members of parliament.
Shadow ministers.
After 2014, they've
been
shadow
the
ministers. And I think now they realize the problem of trying to be a shadow when you are being called upon to be the real thing.
Yeah, the sun.
And I think that's important in terms of strategy. But also it tells you that government is actually quite a bureaucratic beast that needs to be well understood, the relationship between government and parliament and so on. So we're going to see as they find their feet how they take advantage of the opportunity. But I would say the happiest person out of the GNU arrangement is Gaitin Mackenzie. I mean, it's funny how he is gaining traction with people because he's allowed he's allowed himself to be himself in the role. He's taken his loud personality with him. I mean, if you've met Gaitin, anyone who's met Gaitin knows he's got a massive presence. He's a massive, massive presence of a human being, and he's taken that to his position. And just to make you laugh, I realize that there's a real traction with Gaitin. My mom one day, I even had to screenshot this on her WhatsApp statuses. She woke up praising him. Yes, when I'm Minister of Sports, Arts and Culture, do your thing. This must have been about 10 to 10 in the morning.
Yes.
Then later on in the day, in the evening, before my mom went to bed, she wrote something about Gaitin. I said, this lady has been thinking about Gaitin the whole day. What's going on? It shows you, I mean, and my mom is there seeing Gaitin work. She's in Flagstaff at my village. And that's how far and wide Gaitin's energy is traveling and inspiring people to believe that ministers can actually get busy in a positive way, in a way that doesn't irritate society, and in a way that society actually engages with. And I think that actually is going to be interesting to see what becomes of Patriotic Alliance in future elections. And I think the only challenge they have is their inability to strengthen their bench. Patriotic Alliance is still pretty much, Gayton and Kenny. And beyond that, you don't really know much of the players. Then they get to fire some in parliament and or they resign, whatever it is that politicians would say. But I think Gayton is the happiest earner of the GNU. I mean, he's even giving away his salary. That's how happy he is.
Yeah, gaining traction and losing weight.
Yeah, exactly. Wednesday weigh in challenge.
I'm not sure. I want to see that scale. But anyway, and the losers?
I think the biggest losers in this arrangement is the EFF. They've completely lost political traction in our landscape. Of course, they are also just facing a bit of an onslaught from the MK party in terms of some of their leaders crossing over. I know that Julius Malema hates this being called an exodus. So we will not call it that, but there is a serious migration of some respected figures, both at a national level and at a regional level. I mean, we saw in the Northwest one of their former leaders there leaving to rejoin MK. And then, I mean, one of those earlier adopters of EFF who then left, like Andile Mngitama did, Lichshield Chabalala, she's now joined MK. So I think the EFF is probably the one party that has a headache on how to survive into the future. The EFF, if you remember very well, between 2014 and 2019 was very instrumental in shaping the public discourse of our country, the things that we must talk about, whether it was Zuma Must Go, whether it was Babaka Tuduzane, whether it was the fun and the serious. The EFF was really at the heart. And now you feel a sense that some of its leaders, like Mbuyiseni Ndlozi, have been muted to a degree. There's of course the upcoming National People's Assembly, which I think is going to be a make or break for the party in terms of who emerges as deputy president and who emerges around that leadership of Julius Malema and the new deputy president, and will it be people who are entrusted enough to actually go out to the length and breadth of the country to try and revive the EFF. So I think in some way, that's a big loser. It's going to sound funny. I do think, though, while I've spoken about the ANC as a winner, there are elements of the ANC that are a massive, massive loser. And I think it's the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal. I mean, these guys lost so much in that province. I mean, they were at 45 seats in the provincial legislature before elections out of the 80. They are today sitting at 15 seats, and they still don't know what the problem is.
Yeah.
They really still don't know what the problem is. And part of that is because the MK party was so good at infiltrating them from within. And it's quite clear, and I've been saying this, quite clear that the ANC people And I think that makes that part of the ANC a big, big loser. And I think it's going to be very, very difficult to rebuild the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal in this current moment.
So, before we move on, I think we missed out on a very important winner in this process. I mean, Unonso finally has an office. I don't think the PAC ever had an office for the last decade. Now he has an office and bodyguards and two houses. Like, he has to be a winner, a quiet winner.
Absolutely, quite a quiet winner. And I've been observing because I mean, you know, sometimes you happen to be in funny WhatsApp groups that you just find yourself in if you've been in the media space for too long.
I know.
And I get some updates, from the PAC ecosystem, and it's an interesting win for him because it has created massive pushback. So there are certain sections of the PAC that call him a sellout, and now he can't, but we are Teketa, he can't speak properly on the question of the land because he must now champion the GNU thing. So
well, he's got
he's
land
no
now.
Longer,
he's okay.
Africa as he's no longer an authentic Africa. He's a diluted Africa and so on. so it's interesting how it's erupting once more. those divisions that have become, synonymous with the PAC. And I think the PAC for the last 15 years has always just had some trouble of people organizing around and against the main leadership structures. But there really is some pushback, but he's making it work. He definitely is to a large degree a quiet winner. And I suppose if we're to talk about quiet winners, you then say finally the general is also at
Ujanele
defense.
is now running the army. I mean, we know that Mami Angie is not doing that.
No, no,
The
no,
man
no.
is back in his terrain now, right? I mean, he's
Absolutely.
saluted as a
Yeah,
general again.
absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know what journalist thought was being funny. I saw a clip asking him about the coup he
The
did in
coup,
Transkei.
yes.
And I wondered if they were trying to suggest if the general could do one now.
We must watch him. We must watch him. So, but
Watch him very closely.
and I'm not suggesting it doesn't happen. I'm sure in all coalitions, because the GNU is practically a coalition, that the coalition partners do differ because they don't necessarily come from the same
No, of
school of
course.
thought, right? But the bickering between the ANC and the DM, and it almost feels like these guys don't really want to be in this association together.
It's an uncomfortable association because it has the possibility for mutual destruction with the various constituencies. So, for example, take now what President Ramaphosa has done with really, well, I'm struggling to find the words that are palatable for public usage. With the shifting of Thembisa Melane from Justice and Constitutional Development to Human Settlements. Slowly, when things like that happen and you don't push back, and I've seen a number of parties in the GNU saying that they will use the clearing house meeting that is on Friday this week to discuss this issue with the ANC, because the problem is that there's a high risk of you ending up seen as though you are an endorser, and now you've become tamed to speak loudly on questions of integrity, good governance, and so on, because you are enjoying isopo now. You are in on the gravy. And therefore you can't speak. And I think the DA is struggling with that to sustain its identity as an anchor of the politics that they've been championing: rule of law, constitutionalism, good
Good
governance and
governance,
transparency, and so on. And it's not easy to navigate that space whilst you are also in the proverbial bed with the other party. And for the ANC, its distraction comes from the view that they have now allowed the forces, as the General Secretary of the SACP has been at pains to explain to all of us, that they've allowed the enemy to come into government, and therefore you are killing the revolution, because the very people you should be fighting against, that are sustainers of white monopoly capital, are now suddenly in government and are going to reinforce the interests of white monopoly capital rather than do away. So I think that's what causes this bickering, and it must be seen for what it is. Parties that are in an inconvenient marriage, and this inconvenient marriage has a potential threat to their prospects in future elections, and therefore they've got to try, as by all means necessary, to safeguard themselves from losing their identity, particularly with their core constituencies.
Now that and I want we're going to conclude with that, but I want us to deal because you've introduced the issue of Minister Nkadime. I mean, this has to be an own goal on the part of the president and the ANC, right? I mean, here you are in the East Thembu, right? And you still go and impregnate outside, not even one of the women in the room. I mean, it feels like you go out and do another wrong thing out there.
It's completely ill-advised, and I've done a sense check, I mean, with some people in the ANC ecosystem to get a sense of how they feel about it. And it seems as if even ANC people aren't too enthused by this move. And it begins to, it's one of those things that start raising the questions in politics: what does Thembi have on the president? Kind of thing. But it also further exposes her to public criticism. So I don't understand if the president thought He might be shielding her or helping her get out of the limelight. But now then people say, no, 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 hang on. But this person has, you know, allegations that are so serious. And now you are giving her a portfolio that has a serious budget in terms of, you know, front-facing services of delivering housing and other, you know, things within the human settlements portfolio. How do you make and justify that kind of move? But then, of course, on the other hand, it erupts another conversation, which gives, you know, those who are supportive of Tembi a degree of ammunition to say, yeah, you couldn't tolerate her in that department because it may well be that she was pushing back on certain things. Some people have even raised the issue of the NDPP, that her contract might be coming up for renewal, and whether or not she deserves to be reconsidered for that post and so on.
So it becomes all sorts then of conspiracy theories are coming out now, right?
All conspiracy theories are coming out, but I mean, we know. There has been stuff, though, said to Parliament about the Zondo Commission records, for example, and the department not easily handing them over to the NPA. You've got to ask what are all of those things about. Could there be, you know, political considerations there, and therefore removing her from that position will then allow for someone else who's probably more amenable to listen to certain people or not. So it then it just opens up a festive of conspiracy theories, which does not help with showing that the leadership is by any means decisive. I actually think this is probably one of the most cop-out decisions I've seen in a long time.
Really? I think that's all he does. But anyway, let's move on. Has the honeymoon ended, or is it about to end, the GNU honeymoon?
Well, it depends who you are talking to. So there are people who have never really gone into a, who have never been put to a lull by the GNU, so and were always skeptical as to what it is the GNU stands for and what it will seek to achieve. And I think the more it fails to come out with a clear policy and developmental agenda that society can try and hold it to, the more the quicker the honeymoon is going to evaporate. But there will be other sections that probably will be in honeymoon phase for much longer, people like in business and so on. But ordinary people who are suffering the day-to-day chokeholds of poor economic growth, of deteriorating service delivery, unpredictable water cuts and shortages, like I'm told now at home, they woke up without water this morning. Ordinary people are going to get seriously frustrated that the GNU does not seem to be arresting the terminal decline the country has been finding itself under, under the leadership of the ANC. And therefore, if the coalition arrangement continues to sustain the decline of the country, then of course people are going to lose faith in the GNU, and then people will start looking elsewhere outside of the main parties that are in the GNU to say maybe salvation must come in a form of disruptive politics, must come in a form of you know, outsiders, and that's where they might go and look, which is what is happening generally across the world. Where society starts to look, at another direction for salvation in the political landscape.
Finally, assuming our friends get to 2029, still in the same room together, and Tembu survives, who comes out better on the other side of 2029, especially of the two main parties?
It's going to be a tough. It's going to be tough. I think the road between December 2027. And May 2029 is probably going to be the toughest road in our political landscape because in the first instance, the DA itself might have a new leader. The ANC will definitely have a new leader because Ramaphosa can stand
over,
at the December 2027 conference. And then in the first instance, it would be whether those new leaders are able to reconcile with one another, and continue with this marriage. It will be whether or not the ANC will, you know, the new leadership of the ANC will, because of the GNU, avoid the temptation of recalling a sitting president as they've done since 2008. So the big question is Ramaphosa the first ANC president who could finish two terms? So those questions become very important. So there are internal party dynamics that are going to play out to the the GNU. And then as we get closer to 2029, parties will have to make a call, particularly parties like the DA, to say, do we go to the electorate as government, or do we pull out and go to the electorate as opposition? And that's a serious strategic political question to ask, because it then influences how you pitch and how you speak to the electorate. And of course, that will also be, contingent on whether or not the DA will see a new emergence of some party or parties that it may perceive as a threat, just like they did in this election. And therefore, it might feel that if it remains in government and remains a partner to the ANC, the electorate might punish it simply because of that, and that it has not been able to rehabilitate the ANC. It's also going to depend on how, questions of corruption, scandals play themselves out. Will we see more or less of them? Will we see, because if there's more of that, it would then mean that the coalition is not providing an antidote to the things that the country, has been grappling with as causes of distortions in government and service delivery. So I think, Rams, those are the questions really, not necessarily to be quite clear on who emerges better post 2029. I would be able to make that call. I'm never shy to make certain calls when I think I have enough evidence, maybe on the eve of elections, because then we would know how these parties have attended to these questions. But these are the key questions that we've got to look for, and whether or not the new leadership of the ANC may want to reconcile with MK and the EFF. These are serious questions. They are political survival questions, because the ANC might well say, it's quite clear that what eats away ANC support are ANC breakaways. And therefore, for the ANC to survive, it must regroup with its breakaway parties, because the DA is not going to win ANC voters, and the smaller parties are proving to struggle to win over ANC voters. And is it possible for an ANC to be at 50% plus one after the 2029 elections if it reconciles with its externalized factions? And it doesn't need a GNU, it doesn't need a coalition to govern after those elections. So for me, these are the questions that are
Well,
fascinating
it will still be a
and that
GNU
I'm looking
because
at.
those parties are already their own parties, so it will be another East Timor, but a different one of the
Absolutely.
ex-wives that they divorce and they come back into the family and they divorce the new wives,
Absolutely.
right? Gee. Well, moral of the story is that in spite of what Instagram tells us, East Timor is difficult.
This table is very difficult, and those who have grown up under East Timor conditions, particularly the children, and I mean, I stayed in KZN for a very long time, so I had access to a lot of people who grew up in East Timor, and they often find it as probably one of their biggest life regrets. So, if citizens then in this condition are the children, hopefully the children won't live to regret the current East Tembu. But I think the partners must just find each other. There are East Tembu arrangements that work, and they've worked in many places across the world, and these ones must just make it work.
Kuten, always wonderful having you, my brother. Thank you very much.
No, thank you so much, Pudi. Thank you
All the
so
best for
much.
the festive season.
No, you too. Have a happy one, and your listeners as well.
Thank you very
Must
much.
have a good, safe, festive season.
Thank you, and go home.